Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Sam Wolfson. Welcome to the Vice UK podcast. Here's two things I've been thinking about. Number one, it's been a really good year for music. There's been Kanye and Frank Ocean and the rise and rise of grime. Another thing I've been thinking about is that it's been a really shit year for new music. All the successes have been of acts that started in 2014 or before, you know, the likes of Grimes or Stormzy or Novelist, who we're going to be talking to later. All the new acts, the acts that have come out in the last couple of years, have gone nowhere. The two biggest selling debut albums of this year were Zayn Malik and Jack Garrett. And between the two of them, they sold less copies this year than Rick Astley's new album did. Joined by Novelist, as I mentioned, as well as MIA, global superstar, Colin Roberts, music manager, and Laura Doggett, singer. That's going to be our focus this week for the whole episode. We're talking about the future of music. We're going to get going now. We're heading to the Old Blue Last, Vice's pub, where we're joined by Angus from Thump and Emma from Noisy to talk about what's been going on in new music this week. It was the Mercury Prize on Thursday night. Overall, I think Vice and Noisy have been quite critical of the prize in previous years. There's been a lot of quite questionable records on there, things like Ben Howard, I feel like, was on there one year. How do you think this year's nominations compared to previous years?
I think it was a pretty all-around solid list this year, to be honest. Like, you kind of had Anoni and just a good spread of people that represented lots of different...
Do you think that the list should have something from, like, every genre? Is that what the Mercury Prize is supposed to be about?
I don't know. It's usually often felt like it's either too mainstream or too underground or too tokenistic, and this has kind of felt like they've fairly accurately represented the industry as a whole.
I think that one of the other faults in previous years has been that when they've tried to do underground, it's been this very, like, six music-y daddy version of what, like, underground or experimental is. It's all experimental. Yeah, exactly. We're talking about Ghost Poet. All right, okay, fine. Yeah. I'm talking about Ghost Poet. It's the idea of the underground, the experimental, is something a bit kooky, something that maybe, like, yeah, your dad listens to whilst he's, like, on his nice stereo in the other room whilst your mum watches Bake Off. Like, it's that kind of experimental. Whereas I feel this year they hit on artists and albums that have elicited a response in the real world, like that actually people cared about and were talking about things that people cared about, which I think is the crucial difference. So, you know, there were records that had a place in the world.
Yeah, I think they've done that to a larger extent. I mean, there's still like a Bat for Lashes record on there for some reason, and a Laura Mamvula third record on there. But yes, it does seem to be more reflective of the music that people are talking about. Skepta was the winner in a really adorable moment. I think him coming up on stage seemed like he was very chuffed about it. Were you guys chuffed about it? Do you think that was the right call?
Konnichiwa isn't necessarily an album I'm actually, like, hands down crazy about. I don't know if I will come out of this year thinking it's the best album that's been released. But I certainly think that as a gesture, and an important gesture for the Mercurys to make about British music,
I mean, that's a weird thing to say about awards, isn't it? It's like, that's what people say about every year. Oh, they've got to make this gesture, or they've got to make this gesture.
Yeah, but then I feel like, obviously, that's what award ceremonies are. It's like with the Oscars, the best film that year barely ever wins it. It's like, you have to let, oh, Leo gets his year this year, like Coen Brothers get... That's obviously pushing it to an extreme, but I feel like award ceremonies aren't ever going to be objectively saying this was the greatest, like, thing that was made this year. Therefore, it is quite important for, like, the Mercurys to say, this is our statement about British music in this year, and we're going to celebrate Skepta's album, which I think is really important, because he represents exactly the sort of artist that they've neglected pretty much since they gave Dizzy the award, like, what, 10 yeah. years before.
I feel like Skepta winning with Konnichiwa is like, it's like the right artist but not necessarily the right album. It's like Leonardo DiCaprio winning an Oscar for The Revenant.
Yeah,
do you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah. Okay, so obviously there's a lot of critically acclaimed, exciting artists around, but this week on Noisy, we seem to be focusing on two artists who, for some people, might be a bit of a novelty. Sean Paul and Craig David. Emma, okay, so you went on a date with him.
I did.
This is for the Noisy First Date series.
Yes.
Which I invented.
Thank you for that.
Talk me through, like, what's it like to chirp Sean Paul?
I was actually quite nervous for once. I don't really... Normally, the first dates kind of take... The fact that it's framed as a date kind of almost takes the pressure off in a way, because you can ask those weird personal questions and they won't think that you're a freak and walk out of the room, because it's kind of part and parcel of the point of the piece. He told me that he had his first snog at the drive-in watching The Fly... So
really?
Yeah.
Not a classic romantic snog movie, The Fly.
It's not.
Does Sean Paul see himself as like a really serious artist?
People come to Sean Paul for the vocals, I think, more than anything else. He can, it's like that Sia track, like he can kind of do his thing over most styles and you'll be able to recognize his voice and you'll be able to recognize what he's doing. I was kind of asking him if he has any, like, if he's picky about who he works with, because I know that he's kind of like... criticize Drake and Bieber and those kind of artists for dabbling in dancehall, but then not really crediting back where, like, back to the original artist. But yeah, he basically just said that if someone sends him a beat and he likes the beat, he'll sing on it.
Does he know, like, when he features on Little Mix or whatever, has he, like, ever heard that song? Or
he didn't. He had no idea who Little Mix were before someone approached him asking if he wanted to be on that track, but he just thought that the track was banging, so he was like, yeah, sure.
Right, and then he just does it, presumably,
that's
in, like,
literally his
minutes.
Criteria, is if he likes the rhythm, then he's
then he'll
DTF.
Just do it.
For the last, like, 10 years or whatever, I don't think his albums have done, like, amazingly well, but now he's, like,
right.
cresting a wave again, because,
yeah. because
dancehall rhythms have come back around, so... People are turning to Sean Paul because they know how good he is at that. So
that seems like solid reasoning.
Yes.
And Angus, you spent... what happened? You spent some time with Craig David, basically.
Yeah, you know how I do. Basically,
because, like, Craig David started, like, fanboying you about a year ago, is that right?
Yeah, well, no, essentially, like, me and Craig have been friends about a year now, but it started a year ago because I wrote a piece about Craig David saying that he was due a comeback and it was going to happen, and then lo and behold... Just after I wrote that, Craig David had a massive comeback. And I obviously can't say that it was, like, totally my responsibility, but it was largely my responsibility.
More than 80%.
More than 80%. Pushing, like, 85, 86, maybe. Finally, this summer, I got the chance to actually, like, go and meet him in Ibiza, of all places. And we had a very heartwarming conversation where he was actually just, like, so appreciative. He's, like, the only person I've ever written about, the only artist I've ever written about who's, like, got in touch and just been, like, I really appreciate this, like... That's really nice of you.
What's his vibe? Because I, even from a distance, having never spoken to him, I find him quite intense. Like, I find it like he's invading my personal
yeah,
space.
Yeah, he's
little.
Super sincere. Like, he's so sincere. Like, every single thing he said, like, he talks in, like, platitudes, just in terms of, like, talks about how he's following his intuition and how, like, he feels younger than he's ever felt and, like, how focused he is and how real the world is right now. And, like, normally if someone said that to you, you might feel like they were being a bit insincere or like they were just talking from a press release, but it's true. Like, that's the maddest thing. He's just actually, I think he actually just thinks and behaves and treats the world like that. Like, he is just moving through life in this, like, hyper real sincere ultra beast mode where just everything is achievable and he can do anything. It's quite, like, it's quite amazing to spend some time with him because he's just, like, totally, like, firing.
I mean, were you following his Instagram, like, for, like,
oh,
years
yeah.
before his revival came back again, because he would just post loads of pictures of himself at the gym with loads of slogans over the top and mantras, and I feel like that's crept into his approach to music now.
I think it's good that he's like back making music more solidly, because I feel all that energy was going into the gym before. Yeah. Like, he was developing, like, he was almost getting too hench. Like, he had, like, bits, like, muscles that were developing in strange places. So it's quite good now that he's, like, fully focused on making music.
Inspirational.
It's a similar thing, isn't it, to the Sean Paul scenario of, like, he's back now and everyone just loves him, even though he had a period of not being loved.
No, absolutely. And I just think the world's in a better place, though. I think everyone's so much more... Obviously, no, the world famously isn't in a better place right now, but I mean, specifically for respecting stuff like garage, dancehall, like generally, I feel like everyone's more willing to take artists like Sean Paul and Craig David on serious terms and not. Even though you did say earlier that they're both great house party like artists, I think maybe we're slightly beyond the patch where they were like exclusively that. There maybe was a period where they were just like fun music to be played at a house party, whereas maybe now people are a bit more appreciative of what they contributed to their various scenes.
I'm amazed at the space Craig David is in now. He can go on One Extra, Radio 1, Radio 2, This Morning with Holly and Fern, X Factor, like Grime Daily, Link Up, like anything. It doesn't matter what it is. He like fits right in, and he's everyone loves him, and they're happy that he's there.
Yeah.
I can't think of anyone else who's like that broad and celebrated.
No, and the maddest thing is also there are people who are discovering his music now who don't know that he brought out like an album 10 years ago. Like, there are people who are like, who's this Craig David kid? Like, they think that there's like some new like 16-year-old kid on the scene called Craig David, and they don't know it's a 35-year-old man.
Yeah, until
until they see him.
They do find out.
Yeah.
Okay, well, as you may have heard, Novelist is here now. I guess one of the things that I've been investigating a little bit over the last couple of weeks is an issue in the music industry launching new acts. Like, even though it's been such a good year for music and loads of artists that we really like have done well, and we were just talking about Skepta and the Mercuries and all of that, actually for launching new artists, like artists who have emerged in the last year or two onto kind of commercial success, things have taken a real nosedive in terms of the number of like new artists releasing debut albums, new artists getting signed, new artists getting in the charts. I've been talking to a few people about that, including a music manager, Colin Roberts, MIA, global superstar, and a recently signed singer called Laura Doggett, about the ways the music industry is changing. So gonna hear a bit of that and then talk to Novelist and Angus and Emma about what's going on.
I'm Colin Roberts. I'm an artist manager at Big Life Management. I work with acts including Block Party and some breaking acts including Wills. So for the first 8 years of my job, we would find things, they would get record deals. Compared to how it is now, it was great. This year, the British music industry has broken, I would suggest, two acts at a push in Britain. Those acts are Jack Garrett and Dua Lipa, right? Jack Garrett is playing to massive audiences. He's a great artist, but I don't know if I would call him a pop star in the most traditional sense. And I think in a music industry 15 years ago, he would have been a really well-respected left-of-centre artist, perhaps in the vein of somebody like Beck, who wouldn't be expected to be the big white hope. But then you look at everything else that was on the sound poll. It's not like people aren't trying, you know. Blossoms had a number one album, but in real terms, I think it was about 20,000 albums. It's like, if you went and showed that to somebody in 2006, they would cry.
That was Colin Roberts, music manager, and I think he really gets to the crux of the issue, is that although there are a lot of new acts coming around and you wouldn't really notice that there's a struggle in new music, as soon as you compare it to a decade ago, then you start to see what a huge drop-off there's been. He mentioned Jack Garrett. There's an artist who's had loads of marketing, loads of spend, and when it actually came to him releasing his album, it went in at number 12 and then dropped out the charts completely. Izzy Bizu, another artist who had the kind of things Garrett had, BBC Sound Poll, Brits Critics' Choice, loads of marketing. Her album came out a couple of weeks ago, it went in at 20 and then dropped out the charts completely. I think it sold around 2,000 copies. Something huge has changed. And maybe one of the reasons for that is that there is now this big elite of artists. Drake had a number one song all summer long. There was no one that could challenge him. Now, you could argue that's because it was a really good song, or you could argue because music has coalesced around this small group of artists so much that there's no room for anyone else. Here's MIA.
It's like on the top of the pyramid, there's about five artists, and they basically take all of everything else and suck it up. We've figured out how to press the green button on a record to get the maximum impact and hits and sales, but it can only work on that level of pop musicians who are like super brands that are politically charged. You know, they're supported by like Hillary Clinton. Because, for example, Radiohead were huge, right? They were as huge as Kanye. How is that possible? All of those outlets that supported Radiohead now support Kanye, and they don't have room for Radiohead. You know, so like Pitchfork or Vice and all of these people that would support a weird fucking like rock artist.
Yeah.
Now they all back the same thing. It's like you have to back Coca-Cola, Nike and Kanye.
Yeah, that's all we ever write about at Vice. Coca-Cola, Nike and Kanye. Here's Colin again.
My worry is that the dominance of these giant American artists that you can't get anywhere near means that actually getting something into that space where it goes from, you know, the Shepherd's Bush Empire and having a devoted fan base to a wider audience is almost impossible, because the streaming chart informs what the radio plays. So the radio plays then inform what people stream, because the biggest place that people get the idea of what they're going to go and type into Spotify is what they hear on the radio.
Everyone in the music industry seems obsessed with radio and the influence it has on breaking acts. Why is it such a big deal? We spoke to Laura Doggett, who's one of those artists who got signed to a major label after a lot of hype for one of her tracks, and she talks about the way that radio can influence everything else in her career.
Take your time as a new artist. Make those bad first albums, make those like arty things, take that journey in yourself, and you'll get there. And that's true with all of the greats. Their third or fourth album on it. And that's what we're not allowed to do. We were going really well into my first album campaign this time last year. And I've just been on Jules Holland and had a good sync with Broadchurch on ITV over Christmas. I was due to headline the introducing stage at BBC Radio 1's Big Weekend, which I did. But just before that, we released a song called Into the Glass, like May time last year. And basically, radio were like, we love Laura, but we're not going to play this. And that's fine. Like, for me, that was fine. But for the label, it was a big problem, and they stopped the whole campaign and said, you need to write us hit songs. I tried to write them a bunch of hits. Like, they sent me to LA, sent me everywhere. And then in January, they said, Laura, after a summer of writing, they were like, Laura, who are you? You're not the artist I signed. I don't know how to market this anymore. And I was like, I didn't want to change. Like, I did that to try and facilitate you.
It's nothing new that artists are getting signed and then things don't work out, or they're having fights with their labels. But how big of a problem is it actually now in 2016? Here's Colin again with the last word.
If we don't allow new artists to break through, we'll run out of festival headliners. We'll be in a place in 25 years where all the artists that we care about now will either be old or dead, and we'll suddenly go, oh shit, we haven't got any new music.
And to me, that's what's critical about this. Maybe we're just seeing the tremors now of an earthquake that's actually going to change everything in music. Here's Novelist.
Well, like, what are you doing to the artist? Like, did you really care about them? If you did care about them, you wouldn't tell them to do a service for your purpose. You'd try and get their great art out. Even if it didn't make the sales that you wanted, at least you put a product in the air and that actually sounds good. You know what I mean? And I feel like something may not blow up at first. It may blow up after 5 years because someone puts it in a movie or whatever. Give things time. But if it sounds good, that's undeniable. And the people who will appreciate it will probably be the vast majority.
I mean, if I was being completely like contrarian, I'd say there's obviously no harm in like pop music in like its most pop sense. Obviously, we're not talking about like what Nov does or stuff like that, but like proper like pop music, then yeah, maybe if like Heart doesn't want to play it, then it's not gonna be a massive like pop song that summer. But I think the issue much more with this incident is like, why is the instruction being given to go away and write hits? Like that to me is like where the weird, that's where the madness. Communication breakdown happens, because it's like they're is no formula obviously for these sorts of things. Like if you look at what have been like the biggest heaters over the last like couple of years, like look at like Cheerleader, which suddenly went absolutely nuts. Like that was one of the biggest songs like yeah, who'd have thought that like an EDM remix of you know that song would have suddenly like burst through and become like one of the biggest songs.
You never know what's going to be a hit,
exactly,
like, or how people are going to receive it. It just might touch someone else who's influential's nerve, and then they tweet about it. Then everyone's like, oh, you know what I'm saying? I've seen things catch a fire online.
Yeah.
And you think, how on earth was that even flammable? You know what I'm saying?
You've obviously, you know, seen different sides of the music industry in the last couple of years.
Everything, basically.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And you must have had offers from labels and all of this kind of thing. And then a couple of weeks ago, you said, not going to do any of that, going to do it just with my team on my own.
Yeah.
What was your kind of process of thinking behind that, and how's it going to work now?
I've seen how the labels operate with artists. I've seen how like management teams work. I've seen how having your own personal manager works. Like, I've seen certain things, and I've seen how just having a PA works by itself. And I said, I need to collate my own team. Rather than going to organisations that are already standing, I need to have people that look at my life as valuable as their own. So in a sense that if I don't work hard for this person, I am not getting paid. Or we're just not going to get to the goal that we are all heading for. Do you know what I'm saying? So that's why I said, right, I'm going to be independent and I've just started my own label. I'm going to be releasing my own music. The more work they do for me is the more work they'll have for themselves in the future anyway, because once we set up the label properly and we start signing many artists, that's just more jobs for them to do, more things for them to focus on, you know. And I feel like having your own personal team that you can trust, that you grew up with, is very important. Now, that engine may not work for everyone, but I know for a fact that's what works for me, because every time I've got a glimpse of doing it, things move very rapid for me. Things move fast and people bend over backwards to help you, especially when they know that you're in a position where you can't do everything by yourself. And that's where I'm at right now.
Do you never worry that if you're picking your own people and you've got your own team, they might not have all the connections to, like, you know, that someone at a big label would have, or they might not be able to, like,
no.
get you on Jewels or whatever?
No, because the music overrides that. The sound of music overrides that. People will start to want you. It's not about, the misconception is that the labels make the artists. It's actually the artists making the labels. The labels wouldn't have any work if there was no artists. So you see, like, all of these links and all of these things, these people, if your music is that good, they will soon find out about you. Naturally, anyway.
I think that maybe 10 years ago, people at the labels were the creative people, and they were doing what basically a manager does now. And maybe managers weren't that creative 10 years ago. They were more like, yeah, you need to be here, you need to be here. And it was the A&Rs doing the creative thing. Yeah. And I think what's changed is, because artists want control and they want to work with teams that they trust and know, the managers become the creative job.
And you know what? It's shown that what we was talking about before, these so-called links don't matter.
Mm.
Because you'll gain them anyway. Because they need the actual link, the plug, they need work. So they need to link you. If you're the next hot thing, they're not going to ignore you. So why is it the label that's in control of whether you meet this person or not? They're not. That's how I look at it.
Certainly music has become way more focused on, like, this elite group. Maybe that it was a much bigger group a few years ago, and now it really is, like, everyone's getting so gassed about the Kanye release, everyone's getting so gassed about the Beyonce release, even though there's all this other really exciting stuff going on globally. There are these big releases everyone cares about. If you want to get into that group, do you think the best way to do that is without a label? Is there any way into that group?
Oh, it's so funny. It's kind of hard to say because people haven't seen it happen yet.
Yeah, exactly. It hasn't happened yet, right? Like, Stormzy is probably the best example of how far someone can go without that traditional infrastructure.
Yeah.
And he is pretty, like, huge, like, famous. He can't walk down the street anymore.
Yeah, he definitely can't walk down the street anymore. You have to grind for years. and all of them have. Everyone's trying to get there quickly. Like, Drake's been doing this for ages. Rihanna's been doing this for ages. Kanye for ages. Beyonce for ages. If you want to become one of those guys, you might have to just work at the same rate you're working at very hard for the next 10 years. And then you'll be one of those guys, maybe not with them, but there's going to be a next generation of elite group. There always is. Maybe you got to sleep with one of them. You know what I'm saying? Or something. I don't know why everyone's fighting to get there.
If you're talking about what you want out of your career and your life, you look at Jerry or someone like that and you're like,
nice.
Nice.
I bumped into him yesterday when I looked in his car. He's got a mad screen in his car. Just like, this guy is just the same as me, but he's just enjoying his life in a way that he wants to. Why does anyone want anything more than that? If you want more than that, then you're going to have to compromise and do things that you wouldn't naturally do. And maybe that's what the people at the top have done.
You know, that's how it always has been, right? That there have been elite artists and then new people come through and they become the elite artists. But what has really changed in the last 2 years is that people aren't getting to that first level in the same way they were. I know we talk about some exceptions and what's going on in grime and what's going on in independent scenes, and that is great. But the two biggest debut albums this year are by Zayn Malik and by Jack Garrett. And together, they have not sold as many copies as the new Rick Astley album.
I kind of feel a bit like maybe what's happening at the moment is there's we've cut out a middle rung, essentially. It feels like there's that middle ground where people like Jack Garrett maybe would have been able to make some sales, where like Keen would have sat like a few years ago and stuff like that. But like that kind of doesn't exist in the same way. There is this like super elite tier of people like Kanye and Adele and Drake who just like are crazy big. But then you have this really, really healthy underground, completely independent thing going on. And actually the elite artists and the underground artists are communicating with each other absolutely fine without the help of major labels, which kind of gets rid of the need for somebody like Jack Garrett to meld electronic music and indie and be all like cool for like,
it's impossible.
You don't need that anymore. You don't need a middle of the road artist who's doing underground stuff in a safe way, because the underground and the mainstream are talking to each other without the help of anybody else.
Right. So you don't
need a very great analysis.
You don't need that kind of bridge. Yeah, it's strong.
I just look at it like some people have the source that everyone's looking for. Now, Adele will come and chill with the mandem. I can't see Zayn Malik doing that.
No.
Do you feel what I'm saying? And I don't want to bring it back to the culture, but I feel like there's an underlying tone of they're cool.
It's like realness, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like authenticity. Because that was another thing about Jack Garrett, is like, I found it really interesting. His whole PR trail, they tried to make him look like super authentic. Like everything he did, they were just so like,
it's funny,
he's just like
that.
Humble, like ground level.
They tried to make him look like
that. Yeah, exactly.
We shouldn't be having that convo if it
Why is
if
that?
He really was.
Yeah.
Because we would never say that about Adele.
Yeah.
Maybe it's going to be a lot more people like Nov and a lot less people like Zayn Malik or Jack Garrett. I mean, maybe they're literally the last two through the door, and even they're barely through the door. At Vice, we did a big survey where we asked people to name the artists that they discovered this year that they fell in love with, and people said Grimes, Christine and the Queens, Tame Impala, Stormzy.
Oh, Tame Impala, my favourite.
But all of those acts are like more than 4 or 5 years old. And people were saying, oh, I discovered them this year. I feel like they were all incubated in a different time, maybe.
Yeah, right. And also all artists that built up their underground credentials and their following and then emerged triumphant into the like mainstream off the back of that. Like, none of them are people who got picked up and manufactured and sold
none
to the
them.
Public.
And it comes back to that thing MIA saying about, like, now you make one good track and Kanye is shouting you out or whatever, and then you get all the glare, and it's kind of impossible for you to just be like, okay, safe, I'm just going to stay in like my area and do my thing and wait for another 3 years until I'm ready. Or even if it's not impossible, no one does that because people want success and they get excited by it.
That's the difference between me and everyone. Because as I said, I've already been around all these guys, and if they was to ever offer me a song, the song would have to sound exactly how I want it to for it to work. But it's never like that with these guys, and that's why people get compromised. Do you feel me? And why are you going to make music in a way that you wouldn't have originally made it just because it's a feature or a link up? Doesn't make sense. Doesn't make no sense. Now, I'm not saying that if you want to really stretch your art, it doesn't even necessarily... Say Drake wanted to make a tune with me. I wouldn't get him to spit double time on a Gram song unless it sounded super sick. I might even just get him to put some samples in it, you know, of his voice or whatever. It'd still be a Drake feature, you know? But everyone compromises what they would have originally done to fit something new. That's not a real collaboration to me. That's a adhere. That's when you're adherent.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I mean, sometimes, you know, like, to go back to David Bowie, I think Heroes was a song that David Bowie wrote when the label were like, give us a hit. And that's obviously quite a good song. So, like, you know, I feel like sometimes, you know, sometimes people are, like, just doing their own thing and really involved in what they think they sound like, and it's shit. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
There's a flip side of it where, like, sometimes you do need some person.
Well, that's why I said focus on sound.
Yeah. It's a difficult one, because it's about, like, it's not necessarily that you shouldn't have any outside influence. It's just you need outside influence.
Yeah, you need the right. Yeah, it's not don't have any. You need the right, and stretch your abilities to make something that sounds great. That's it. Simple as. Because if I made a great song with Kanye West, people wouldn't look at me like he's that guy that's on a tune with Kanye. They'll look at Ra. That tune with that guy and Kanye is sick.
Yeah,
that's the difference.
Yeah. No, thanks very much for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, man. Bless you.
Cheers.
Love you guys.
And thanks to Angus and Emma too.
Cheers.
And thanks to MIA and Laura and Colin and everyone in the world ever. That was the Vice UK podcast produced by Sam Bonham at Rethink Audio. Thanks very much. See you next week.